This is Birth to Work Radio.
Try to convince a community that had always felt if you had a strong back, you could always make a decent living. That disappeared, but the same people stayed in the community.
The competition is much more prepared in terms of the knowledge base and the expectations, and we have to get there very, very quickly.
The problem with education in America is a problem of trying to use a bureaucratic form to do what is basically a cultural and moral mission.
It's important for business leaders to recognize they play an important role in the vibrancy of the community.
I always felt that as a pediatrician, I was also an educator because the trust that people have in us.
We know that when parents know their children are in an academic crisis, they will move mountains.
The most important thing for parents to do is spend time in human interaction with children.
My goal as a community leader now is to create responsible, engaged citizens. I have to emulate what I want them to do.
And now, here's your hosts, Elaine V. Scott and Rick Stevens.
Hello and welcome to Birth to Work Radio, the voice of the community stakeholder leader, the people who take charge right where they are to make a difference. They exhibit leadership skills and they do it because it's the right thing to do as much as because it makes a difference for them in their own lives. Rick Stevens, welcome. You're here today.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here, Elaine.
Nice to have you back. And our guest today, Pam Pimentel. Pam comes to us as someone who is highly recommended by one of our guests, someone who's been an advisor to Birth to Work and worked with us for some time, Dr. Alberto Gettisman. He highly recommended that given the significance that we place on people who work with children, more with the milestone development of children, he said you must speak with Pam Pimentel. She does exactly that, and she does it in a way that makes a difference, and she's done it for a long time. So, Pam, welcome, and talk to us a little bit about what you do.
Oh, thank you, Rick and Elaine. I'm really excited to be a part of Birth to Work. As a little bit of a background, I am a registered nurse, and my field has always been maternal child health care for over 30 years. And I began my career, as most nurses do, working in a hospital, working in a labor and delivery unit. And I realized a couple of things. I had some aha moments. That, first of all, some of the complications that we were seeing at birth were easily preventable if the intervention had occurred early on, and that by the time the laboring mother comes to the hospital, you know, sometimes the die had been cast and there wasn't a whole lot that we could do to change it. And then the second realization that I had, and I think becoming a mother myself and working with so many young families over the years, was how important it was for a newborn to have a good start, and that if we did all that we could for this newborn to have a rich environment where they cognitively and physically developed, that the child would be so far ahead than one who was left in an environment where there was no stimulation and they were behind the eight ball by the time they reached their first birthday. So early intervention, prevention, and empowerment along the way to new parents is really what I've spent most of my career focusing on.
That's incredible. Now, I'm going to clarify something for our audience. You saw early on that many of the complications occurring with delivery, with mothers delivering, could be averted with early intervention?
Yes,
is that what you were referring to?
I don't necessarily mean the laboring process itself, but I'm thinking of more the mother's health and the health of that baby's intrauterine environment that affect the newborn. And so if a baby is born sick or they're born anemic or they're born with problems that perhaps we could have intervened early in the pregnancy to prevent. That's the thing I'm talking about, not so much the labor itself. Although that is important, and we'd like every woman to have a healthy labor.
This is an interesting area, and we've been involved with actually an organization in Chicago, a hospital in Oak Brook, Illinois, that is implementing an entire parent education program around helping mothers and babies have better health early on. But this is a fairly new program for them, although they've had some kind of prenatal care going on. But your program is bigger than that. Your program isn't just about getting the baby born. It's about a broader picture. Tell us a little bit about that, the reason for that, and how long you've actually been doing what you're doing.
Moms Orange County is the nonprofit that I am the CEO of, and I've been here for 10 years. And our mission, we're a 15-year-old organization, and when the organization began, the founder's vision was that every woman, regardless of her insurance status or ability to pay, would have access to prenatal care. And in the first few years, that was the emphasis of Moms Orange County. Once we really started making a difference in the prenatal care, the organization realized, well, there's the next couple months following the birth that are so critical for the mother's health as her body returns to pre-pregnant and the baby as it makes the transition from fetus to newborn to infant. So we added our services to cover the first couple months. And then along that course, in listening to our clients and responding to the community need, we felt it was important to stay with the mother and the baby for the first year. And that's where we are today. So our services, which are community-based case management, which I think in a nutshell means that we walk with the mother through her journey towards a healthy birth. And our objectives during pregnancy is, of course, that the pregnancy culminates in a healthy child. And then at the end of the first year, we like to see two things accomplished. One, that we have a baby who is on track developmentally, has its immunizations, is growing well, his nutritional status as well, and that we have a mother who is meeting all the indicators of women's health. So the clients, while I think this is important for every single man, woman, and child in our world, that who we focus our services on are the underinsured, uninsured, or mothers that are at very low income. Because we know that our data shows us that this group of mothers is most likely to have an infant born with significant health problems. And so we serve, on average, about 5,000 mothers every year and their babies. And it's just a drop in the bucket compared to how many babies are born in our county, which is about 45,000. But for the mothers and babies and families that we do help that access our services, we have really good outcomes. And what we do is considered very low technology. It's meeting with the mom and her family in her home and assessing her health status from all points of view. So as nurses, we look at the health of her finances, the health of her nutritional status, the health of her relationships, the health of her access to medical care, because all of those things impact the chances of having a healthy baby.
So, Pam, this is Rick. As I think about what you've just described, you know, 5,000 a year compared against of the 45,000 that are born each year, since you've been in operation over the last, it sounds like 15 years, are you beginning to see the statistics for the 5,000 get closer to the other 40,000, or there's still a fair amount of disparity? And the reason I ask the question, you're really focusing on what some might perceive as, well, everyone should know this. And my sense is, over time, probably what you're finding is those with health care insurance may or may not be better off than those without, and what you're doing is providing a service. So can you give us any sense of thought about what you're seeing across this broader population compared to those that you serve?
Yeah, thank you, Rick. I think you're really hitting the nail on the head. First of all, what I'm speaking of is here in Orange County, California, which is in the southern part of California, mostly known for being next to Disneyland. And in most of the ideas about where I'm living is a very affluent population. And the reality is that about 40% of our births, of that 45,000, are born to families living at the poverty level. Poverty level being relative because Orange County, California is a very expensive place to live. So for one thing, we have a growing number of people who are living at the poverty level. And over the last year, we've seen a huge change in people that are becoming uninsured.
we want to come back to this question about how this change in services has occurred, because that is a very critical point in the work that we do at Birth to Work, and that's understanding who makes the decisions about how services are delivered, what services are delivered, and what's the difference between the increasing populations of uninsured in the new economy. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We were just at the point of conversation about the growing number of people who are uninsured in your community, Pam, in the area that you serve. And you're about to make some comments about the difference in the population of people who were insured versus who weren't. What are there differences in statistical outcomes for kids that you can point to, or are they basically the same regardless of the amount of insurance kids actually have?
Well, I'd like to step way back for a moment and talk about the universal experience of pregnancy. And I think it's a humanity base where every pregnant woman is concerned about what can I do to help my baby, and every pregnant woman has questions. And so knowing that as a woman becomes pregnant or in her family, those who are more educated, despite the never minding what their income level is, it has to do with education level. The higher the education level, the more likely a woman is able to access information that she's got questions about, whether it be online or a library or seeking out resources. And I'm defining more education as college graduate and on. If you come down farther into high school graduate, the less likely the mother is to be able to access manuals or books, but still accessing the online. Less than it in high school education is probably the most isolated from information mother. And we know there's a direct correlation between positive birth outcomes and education level. So, you know, the mother who has less education is less likely to be able to utilize any resources around her. And from the March of Dimes national statistics to the local Orange County statistics, babies who are born to mothers who are less educated and more likely to be uninsured are themselves sicker. Now, talking about insurance, where there's such knowledge in this today's world about health coverage and the importance of it, while I'm not going to tell you it's not important, I will tell you it's not the be-all and end-all. Simply being insured doesn't mean you're going to access health care. If you don't understand how to access it, you don't know where to go or who to talk to. Because I will venture to say that the healthcare system is extremely hard to navigate through. So what Moms Orange County does, while I can't wave my magic wand and make it available for every single 45,000 baby here in Orange County, we can focus on those who are most at risk for having a negative birth outcome. And what I can tell you is over the last 10 years, the mothers and babies who are in our program do far better than their counterparts in the rest of our county. The only difference between those moms that are part of Moms and not, you know, is the services they receive through us, which is education, support, referrals, and yet those babies do better. And we have the data and the back, you know, the statistics, black and white statistics, to show that. We have less prematurity, we have better birth weights, we have more success in breastfeeding. We have early literacy. We see less cavities when they're toddlers. You know, really concrete things that we can compare the mothers who participate in our program and their babies and looking at the rest of our county.
So here's a question, and I don't know that I necessarily expect you to have an answer, but this is what pops to mind. We said babies born to moms without insurance have a tendency to be sicker overall. My question is, since most of the world does not have insurance, is that necessarily a function of, is that true universally, that more babies are sicker overall? Is it really a relationship to insurance, or is it precisely, as you said, the relationship to a source of information and a support system that allows them to feel confident and feel part of a community as a result of their pregnancy?
Well, I think one of the biggest ironies in the arena of maternal child health is despite the United States being overall, compared to the rest of the world, a wealthy country and having state-of-the-art medical care, our maternal and infant indicators are worse than we are number 41 in the developed nations of the world. There are 40 other countries that have better birth outcomes than the U.S. does. You would be far better off moving to Poland than you are having a baby in the United States. And so why is there that disparity between a country that is perceived to have so much? Is it the environment? Is it the stress level in our society? You know, we don't know. We have more premature babies. We have more sicker babies across the whole United States. And then if you start looking at the pockets of our country and where I live, where there's poverty and very, very low education levels, it becomes even higher. So there's a problem nationwide in the United States in its delivery of maternal child health.
That's exactly what I wanted to know. You're helping to unravel a puzzle here that has to do with the very thing that is at the heart of the work that I've been doing and been engaged in since Stephanie was born 31 years ago. And that is the work of the child in the context of family and community. And today, Birth to Work is about building what we call civic capacity to support the growth and development of children. And you are the perfect foil for us, the person who stands at the heart and the center of helping parents to help their kids, and not just the mom, but beginning from the moment of birth, to understand that most of what you do then, and I think MIT and at the Sloan School of Management quantified the intervention value of the early years at about $13 to one. For every dollar that you invest in helping children do well, and babies and mothers, you're going to get a $13 return in the community and in the nation down the road, because there's money that you're not going to spend trying to repair or fix what went wrong early on.
You know, the data is really overwhelming, and I can speak very clearly about Orange County in that 75% of the children who are in the special needs education program through the public school were babies who were born premature or low birth weight. And those children...
75%?
75% of the children in special needs. Right now in Orange County, one out of every 10 babies born goes to the intensive care unit after birth, which I think is incredibly high. And the average stay in an intensive care unit is 10 days. The average cost per day is $12,000 a day. And if you compare then what it costs to have one sick baby versus mom's Orange County's rates, which is only 4% of our babies go to intensive care. So six babies do not. Our cost to provide our care is about $1,800 a year. So for a return of investment of $1,800, we have bettered the chances that this mom and baby will do well at birth and after. You know, no one's a guarantee, and I would never sit here and tell you that, oh, I can guarantee it. But I can say that the things we do, which are not rocket science, do make a statistical difference in the society's cost.
So, Pam, I guess the question on the table is, at $1,800, you're educating a mom through the prenatal process, through the delivery process, really working hard to get good outcomes, with the focus, again, on those who are underserved, may not have insurance. And this is information that clearly everyone ought to have, but there's really no mechanism for getting that information unless someone actually, you know, spends time with a mom or parents, which could be the healthcare practitioner. I mean, is this a service that's provided today under current healthcare, or are we really finding ourselves in society, in the American society, with healthcare issues with children because there is no educational system that helps educate the parents, because our healthcare system doesn't pay for it, or there's really just not a mechanism to meet that need?
Yes, our healthcare system does not pay for it. There's still very little value placed on prevention. essentially our healthcare system is addressing pathology and disease. There's a lot of talk about prevention, but there's not a lot of action towards it. And there is no reimbursement for it. Average visit with an obstetrician for a pregnant woman lasts less than 5 minutes. So there's not a lot of time to ask questions. Now, that being said, there are medical providers who staff with nurse midwives and nurses, and there are health plans that have classes available and helplines and support. But I still think that's in the minority of all the children that are born.
And so here we have a situation as we come to the close of this particular segment that, you know, we really need to think about from a community standpoint, how do we help mothers and parents really learn what it means to be able to in pregnancy and deliver a child? And we'll talk more about that when we come right back. This is Birth to Work Radio.
The System, Igniting the Soul of Commerce by Rick Stevens and Elaine Scott is winning accolades as an accessible business novel with a striking new perspective about community collaboration and workforce development for the 21st century. In the book, community leaders in the fictional town of Chantilly learn why they must think and act differently to build a sustainable workforce for the future. Real stakeholder leaders from around the country have used the book as a model for their own communities. Vicki Hogan is president and CEO of the Vermilion Advantage in Danville, Illinois. She and the Vermilion team have been collaborating with Birth to Work to implement the strategies outlined in the system.
Your book is really incredible. It's like a roadmap that in story form really sheds the light on a national issue and makes it obvious in a story form who the key stakeholders really have to be to create sustainability.
Sustainable results will only come from collaboration, alignment, and integration of the people, programs, and ideas of a unified community. The System, Igniting the Soul of Commerce, shines a light on the challenges that communities across the country are facing right now and the forces that drive and influence people's behaviors. Stakeholder leaders such as Angela Phillips-Diaz are using the book as a guide for effective stakeholder action. In her work with the University of California, Riverside, she's charged with improving the college-going rate in the region.
I literally have the book on my desk and use it as a reference tool all the time. It's been invaluable to me.
The System, Igniting the Soul of Commerce, is the guide for stakeholder leaders who want to do business as usual in a new way. Buy it today at birthtowork.org or amazon.com.
And continuing now with at a very rapid clip, we are so delighted to be able to have you help us bring some very specific and clear data and understanding to this issue, Pam. I think your numbers, about $1,800 a year, is all that it takes to educate a mom to have a better baby so that the babies have lower risk later on. You don't just provide parents with information, though. You provide them with random information. It's very clear, specific information so they can benchmark their children. They know what questions to ask about their development. And then we looked at the healthcare system, and we said the healthcare system actually doesn't pay for helping parents learn about how to have healthier babies. It's still concerned with pathology. It's ready to respond if there's a disease or an illness, but it's not there for prevention. Pam, tell us a little bit about you being in a dream world where things are operating exactly as they should. What would it look like for a community to be engaged or involved? What would people in the community need to know about how they influence parents to have healthier babies too?
You know, since we live so close to Disneyland, we often say, you know, if we could walk through the Magic Kingdom, what would our world look like? And first of all, ideally, we would start with preconception care, that a mother, a potential mother, and a potential father would be educated on the things that they need to do prior to conception even occurring. For instance, taking folic acid, making sure there's iron in their diet. And some of the other health habits that are so important. Then during pregnancy, it would be wonderful if every mother in our county knew where to go for information, that there was one central place that I have a question or I'm afraid or I'm worried and could come to for help. We have that now in a little microcosm of Moms Orange County. And then most of the questions occur after birth. A lot of times parents can kind of breeze through a pregnancy and they feel like they have it all covered. They've read a book, they've watched a video, and then the baby comes home and the reality sets in. And so kind of having a rapid response team that a mom can call and say, I'm having trouble breastfeeding, or my baby has a rash, you know, that real early intervention. And then someone who will, I think it's important to have a long-term relationship with one person that this family can turn to at times throughout their babies growing up. What we do at Moms Orange County is we have a curriculum depending on which month of pregnancy, which month of the baby's first year. And so we can talk about the generalities and anticipatory guidance for the mother and the baby and the family's changes. And then we can really address the issues that are important to that family. Because while there are some generalities that apply to all of us, you know, each of us are also unique at the same time. So that, to me, would be ideal. Again, I think working with pregnant women and new moms and dads is so exciting because it's a time in life when you're more likely than in any other time to make a change in your lifestyle and in your health habits. It's a window of opportunity, and I think that's why I've always been so excited to work with parents in this stage of their life.
That really does do a good job, Pam. What you're talking about are questions that are specific to the mom in pregnancy. I'm going to step back even a little bit further than that. And it relates back to the very idea that we have a lot of things we've imposed on parents that we've accepted for parents to go do, whether or not you have a child. And when I talk about how communities can help educate parents, they don't just educate them by giving them specific data about how to take a supplement or where to access care. I'm talking about things that are not quite medical in nature. I'm talking about the invitation for children to be allowed to walk or to be present in certain buildings. I'm talking about the kind of welcoming that a community has for kids as a community. I'm talking about parks. I'm talking about the tendency. I talk about this tendency, for example, for moms to keep babies in these little containers. The American Physical Therapy Association calls this whole new generation of babies for about the last 15 years. They call them, many of them, container babies because the kids spend so much time in plastic containers. And yet people don't question that. They don't challenge that kids are carried around confined in these little containers so that they can't move. And yet we somehow sanction that as if, like one of our guests said, she said, as if babies have this sort of benign illness wrapped up in blankets and pushed around in these metal carts so that they're out of the way. They're not really engaged. And I wonder about that.
Well, as an organization, we do not encourage the use of playpens, infant carriers other than car seats, or even strollers. We encourage snugglies and body contact and taking your baby with you throughout the day. If you look at the data on MRIs of babies' brains as they develop their synapses during the first year, in societies where babies are included in the family's life and more or less attached to one of the parents almost all the time, their brains develop faster. Their brains develop more synapses from that ongoing human contact in those very, very early years. So keeping the infant and the mother and the father together is so incredibly important. But as our society, maybe part of the reason our maternal and child health indicators are so poor in the United States is the separation of mothers and babies and fathers, is because, you know, babies are here and the mothers are not even in the same household or even in the same environment. And I think that the more that we can do to put a value on children in our society, I mean, you can go to a park in a very nice neighborhood where it says, you know, no this, no that, you know, no, but for people and children, but the only thing about pets is to keep them on a leash. And so children are prohibited from doing all these different things, but dogs are okay. We had an incident here in Orange County where a dog had been tortured and just totally mistreated, and it hit the newspapers. and people called and they were very upset and they contributed funds to this dog's veterinary bills and, you know, were clamoring for the mistreatment of this dog. And 2 days later, there was a report of a baby who was 8 months old who died from abuse, and yet nothing was said. You know, and I don't know what that means about our society, that we place more emphasis. I mean, for Moms Orange County as a charitable organization dependent upon the charity of others so that we can offer our services at no cost, we know that nonprofits who focus on the humane treatment of animals and the wellness of animals do far better than we do in soliciting donations. There's a lot of judgment passed on, especially our clients, about whether or not she should be pregnant, how far apart the pregnancies are, just so much judgment. So turning that around to realize that the baby is innocent and that all of us will benefit as a society from having a healthy child who's ready to learn and excel in school versus a child who continues in the cycle of poverty because we all turn a blank eye. I think that they're just kind of a symptom of the overall detachment from infancy.
Well, and I would have to agree with that. And you said a lot of things that were in my heart. Now I know even more why Dr. Gettysman was saying that we should talk, even though you and I didn't get this far in our first conversation, because I feel exactly as you do, that the bonding that occurs, especially the bonding that occurs at the moment of birth, and I'm deeply troubled by the number of moms who have so-called designer births, where they want to have the baby delivered maybe 2-3 weeks ahead because it's of when Mother Nature might have it done. And that's because it's convenient for her and not necessarily into the baby's best interest. And I remember I think it was the early part of the year, or maybe it was even the latter part of last year, that there was an article in the Wall Street Journal about doctors who are finally looking at this notion of designer births and saying, you know, there's a lot of brain development that happens in the last 2 to 3 weeks
That's
of pregnancy.
Right.
And it's not conditional on whether you're 2 weeks or 8 months, 5 weeks. I mean, it's just whatever that last 2 to 3 weeks is, it's like the finishing touches on the brain.
Right.
And
well,
moms who take out those babies early.
I will tell you about how the almighty dollar is going to affect all of this, because it's going to be...
I will be very interested to hear that. So I'm coming back after the break. I hope you are too. We'll be right back. I think, Pam, you're turning out to be one of our more adaptive learners here, having already now moved right into closing out a segment and leading us into the next part of our conversation. And I want you to please go forward with what you were just about to say at the close of our last segment.
Well, I am passionate about what we're talking about, so I'm sure that has become transparent. But earlier you were talking about designer births, and we have a saying among nurses, too posh to push. And this has been a trend for about 10 to 15 years, but it's starting to change. Businesses paying attention to birth outcomes in young babies is starting to change, and the whole educational system focusing on those very, very early years. And it's because of the dollars. Insurance companies are starting to look askance at paying for cesarean births when there's been no trial of labor. There are insurance companies, health insurance companies, are starting to realize and put money towards true prevention and early intervention because of the cost benefit down the road. One of the largest single funders here in Orange County, when we presented to them how many dollars they're spending as an employer in paying for a sick baby or a mother who is missing work because her baby is so ill, and the cost of our services, they are now funding their employees who are still low income, even though they're employed, accessing our services. So I think that the
wow.
cost-benefit analysis, you know, from taking it from a purely financial point of view, is starting to shift our society's understanding of the importance in exactly what you and Rick are doing, Elaine, in birth to work. That our future, more than ever before, is our children, and that, you know, each baby that's born that recognizes their potential, you know, as we raise up one, we raise up all of us. And I think that is an interesting shift from, say, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, when I'm a brand new nurse and feeling like there was absolutely no importance placed on this young baby.
I don't think there was a lot of understanding. I think in the experience that I've had in working on this issue, what I've come to deal with is the reality of it being a female issue, of it being one that many people do not step into that world because they truly don't have any experience with it. And the idea of trying to intervene between a mother and her baby seems almost sacrilegious. You just don't do that. But it also is true, and this is, I've written about this several times, Pam, that the basic conversation about moms and babies and parents and kids, especially when they first get pregnant, is that they're basically not competent. And not competent meaning from the moment that you get pregnant, you're told you better go and you better find an expert. You better find an expert location, an expert person to guide you, an expert. And this is in the circles, the middle class circles that I operated in. So that the immediate feeling that you have is that as a woman and as a human being, you're really not competent to do this by yourself. And any of the decisions that you make are suspect if they haven't been pushed through a doctor. But the other side to that, of that issue has to do with the legal system also that comes back and takes the doctors by the throat and wrings them out if something in the pregnancy is supposedly not ideal. So we have a pretty tough system overall and on many fronts. And I remember myself having gone through two pregnancies, and both pregnancies I delivered at home. And I remember the grief that I took 30 years ago. And I was considered an odd duck for doing that. And yet around the world, people, not only do they still do it, you know, most babies were born that way. So I feel a little of your sense of understanding why people would start to suspect about why you would have these designer births. Why are those necessary if you haven't even given the other one a shot? And do you want to comment about why a delivery even matters more when you don't do the cesarean?
Well, a couple of things I want to mention about the things you were saying, Elaine, and, you know, besides the fact that I totally agree with you, is that one of the miracles of modern science is that it has validated the things that some of us have held as integral to baby's health for 35, 40 years. And that is that because we can look at a baby's brain now, you know, as a baby is nursing at the breast, you know, that movement actually shapes their jaw, which then affects their language abilities, that the position they're held in while they're breastfeeding reduces the amount of ear infections because of the way the eustachian tubes are being pressed on. So I feel really encouraged that we have things, data, that makes a certain segment of our population wake up and pay attention. Not only have we had a medical system that discounts a mother and father who are newly pregnant or going through pregnancy, but the parents themselves didn't know how to advocate for themselves. So while, you know, I never want to demonize the medical system, but I do think it's important that we encourage not to have this white coat respect and that whatever they say goes, but to take an active part in planning your health, which is what you did. You actively took part. And, you know, whether or not a home birth is a great idea or not, we'll probably never agree on. But whether or not a mother and a father deserve to have an absolute say in how that birth is conducted, I believe we always will agree on. The importance of birth in of itself is it's a transition time for the fetus to become a newborn. And the process of being born helps that adjustment where the baby now begins to breathe on their own, from being in a fluid environment to being in a dry environment, from having its oxygen and nourishment come through the umbilical cord to having to get that on its own by breathing and by sucking and swallowing. And so how the baby is born, the actual mechanics of it, do make a difference. In our mechanical medically pathology-oriented society, there's been some lack of understanding that a cesarean birth, while at times it is totally indicated, can also bring its own complications because of the major abdominal surgery the mother went through, the lack of coming through the birth canal that prepares the baby for taking its first breath. And so there's all kinds of things that have been kind of sloughed to the side. But the interesting thing is that as the dollar takes more precedent, I think that less of births that were unnecessarily performed will occur. And again, that also points to the legal questions that you were talking about. You know, is a physician practicing because of legal issues and their malpractice insurance, or are they truly giving what they think is the proper medical care for a mom? So while obstetricians pay some of the highest malpractice rates of all physicians, you know, they're also afraid that the parents won't take an active part in their own health care and then in turn around and sue them if they have a negative outcome. So so many things about birth are unknown. You know, we cannot tell you exactly what you have to do to have a healthy baby. I mean, if you have diabetes, we can tell you exactly how much insulin you need to take. But when it comes to birth, there are so many unknowns still and things that are out of our hands. And that's where an obstetrician or a midwife finds himself every day, is practicing an art. It's certainly not a science.
But you would say in the ideal world that every couple or parents really needs an education to understand what's going on during pregnancy, what should happen first year after birth, that every set of parents should understand where they can go get support from the community. I mean, the ideal world, you'd expect the 45,000 births that occur every year in Orange County, that every one of those parents would get the same sort of program that's being delivered through the Moms Orange County program to ensure that there's a higher probability of success, not only through pregnancy, but birth and healthy baby thereafter.
I think you summed it up beautifully. I mean, that is it. You know, what you've said, we need to write that down and send it out to everyone because it is the essence of all the things I've been trying to say. You just summed it up there, Rick. You got it.
Pam, you are absolutely beyond even our best expectations of what you would contribute. And again, we say thank you for taking the time to be with us. There's so many questions that I wanted to ask you. I wanted to ask you about the way in which you help parents actually learn how to watch the developmental milestones. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the nutrition guidance that you give. And I'm going to ask your permission to have you back and actually do when we do our work with specifically for parents in another segment. I want to have you come back and talk to us some more. The gift that this is that in recording it, it's something that we can share with a lot more people more often. And I'm very excited about the things that you were talking about that happen at birth and the things that I tell parents all the time about the benefits of nursing, things that Mother Nature figured out long before we ever did. And you are about as natural as all of those blessings, and you've provided a safe community for 5,000 moms. You've made a home for yourself in a place where you're very needed, and the work that you do makes a difference. I'm not sure one can have a life as a stakeholder that does any more than that. And we really appreciate the opportunity to showcase your work, showcase your organization, and to put birth to work in the same conversation with who you are and what you're about.
I just hope that the listeners will become motivated to become educated and through that be empowered and through that have good health. That's where it all comes from.
Pam, in the last few seconds, if people want to contact Moms OC, how do they do it?
We're on the web at www.momsorangecounty, and you should be able to find us there.
Great day. Pam, thanks very much. This is Elaine Scott and Rick Stevens and Pam from Moms Orange County. It's been a great opportunity. Look forward to talking to you next week.
Thank you for joining us on Birth to Work Radio. For more information about Birth to Work, to stream or download podcasts of archived radio programs, or to purchase a hard copy or downloadable version of Rick and Elaine's book, The System, Igniting the Soul of Commerce, please visit our website at birthtowork.org. That's birth, the number two, work.org. We invite you to send us your feedback and questions directly by emailing info@birthtowork.org. Birth to Work Radio, the voice of community stakeholder leaders.